Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050, online tsn1050.ca. Your home smart speaker now up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Dave Pullen in studio. And it's going to be an active week in the NHL, and I have to think Seattle and the National Hockey League probably not ecstatic with the fact that the whole team has been revealed. They're doing their big reveal tonight, which I still think will be somewhat entertaining, and they've got celebrities coming out. They're going to be creative with it. It's a big moment for them.
It's disappointing for them in the way the information got out. It's too big of a gap, right? And they say they need the time to make sure the contract, everything lines up and everything's, you know, eligible. But the gap from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., you can't give the insiders that much time. You just can't. And there's too many people involved. You've got to let the player know. You've got to let the agent know. The final piece just fell into place, Brian. Dennis Cholowski, the final piece from Detroit, the 23-year-old defenseman, he's actually played 100-plus games in the NHL, will be the Detroit piece going to Seattle. And everyone thought it was Steve Yzerman just staying close to the vest and not releasing it, but they actually couldn't get a hold of the player to tell him that he was going.
Which I think is a pretty good strategy. Just if
it is.
Ron Francis never calls you, then you can't go to Seattle.
Can't go to Seattle.
Yeah. Just get rid of your phone number.
So he's a Western kid, though.
Disappear.
He'll be fine going out there. And it looked like he was really coming onto the scene when he burst into the NHL, and then he took a step backwards, as young defensemen will do, and ended up playing in the minors. But you wouldn't know that about Grand Rapids because you don't go.
No, that's not my wheelhouse. I don't follow them. They're not. It's just not
first
my wheelhouse.
First rounder in 2016, 20th pick overall in the draft. So
there you go.
There goes another first rounder from Detroit.
Yeah, well, we'll see. As for the Maple Leafs, again, Jared McCann is the pick. So the Leafs have effectively gave up a prospect and a seventh rounder to keep Kerfoot. And I guess keep Dermott as well. Like, there was some thought that maybe Dermott would be the guy that would go. But now that it's over, unless there's more still to come, where the Leafs in Seattle could still be working out other deals, you know, maybe some of the players that were acquired by Seattle would be of interest to the Maple Leafs because they're not all going to stay in Seattle.
Particularly in the defensive group.
Exactly, yes. Specifically maybe on the back end. I don't think any of the goalies would be options for the Leafs.
Well, they only took three, too. Like, you could have taken more goalies. If they had taken four or five goalies,
you know they're flipping one or two.
And you would say, well, they're flipping one of them. But that makes a total of 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do the math on that.
Yeah,
couple guys are going. Yep, for sure. But I think, you know, the Leafs. We've detailed a lot of what they still have to do in the next couple of weeks. If Hyman's going to go, and apparently reportedly Zach Hyman is in Edmonton right now, and could be working on a deal with the Oilers. So that means he's going to walk if Freddie Anderson ends up going, and he could still stay. But if he goes, then you got to find a goalie. You got to find a first-line left winger and then some depth pieces. But the core of the team is coming back, and the core of the team had a great regular season last year and had a
tremendous
very good
regular
first
season.
Five games, you know, of the playoffs. So you're still coming back with Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares. Kerfoot's going to be a part of that. Mikheyev likely a part of it. Spezza, Simmons. And I think a top four that's been protected. So you know they're playing. That's your top four. You're coming back with Riley and Brody, Muzzin and Hall. Going back to the well with that. And Sandin's here. Dermott's here. I think they'll add a little bit there. Campbell's here. They got to find another goalie. But, you know, you still get the workings of a very good team.
Yeah.
A very good team. Can they be great?
Nick Robertson in that mix somewhere, Brian.
I need to see a little bit more from him because he just hasn't played a lot. Well, he's got to make the team. He's got to make the team, though, Pooley. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you hand him a spot.
No. No, I'm putting this on the players.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah, and so Robertson, you know, he very well could put himself in a position where he's a part of this team, by all means. You know, is he going to step right in and be on a top line with Matthews and Marner? I think that's asking too much. But could he be further down the lineup? Yes. Could Kerfoot play the wing? Mikheyev play the wing? Obviously on the left side, yes.
Has Engvall, the European shopping, we haven't heard that much about this year. And
no.
Each of the last few years, they've brought a couple of players over, you know, 24 to 26-year-olds from Europe. And quite frankly, you know, they haven't worked out as well as they had hoped.
No. Barabanov last year didn't work out, among others. But, Yeah, there's still some holes that have to be filled, which we knew was coming. You knew Seattle was taking someone. Mm-hmm. You know, Seattle was coming, and they were going to take somebody, and it was going to deplete your talent. And
really, they didn't take anyone that
in a way they didn't in terms of the big league roster. Yep, because the Leafs made a deal, giving up a prospect and a pick, a seventh rounder, and Philip Hollander, who knows if he's ever going to play, to basically keep Kerfoot, a guy that they know who is a known commodity. And to your point, Paul, he had a great playoff. Those seven games, he played really, really well. Mm-hmm. And he's playing in the middle of the ice, too, which, you know, I've been waiting for him to give a little bit more on that third line, but maybe that is maybe you're going back with Matthews, Tavares, Kerfoot as your 1-2-3 up the middle of the ice, and that's not going to kill you. I mean, to put it lightly, that's going to be a pretty decent 1-2-3.
But when you think of lines that have been effective, even Gordon, Coleman, and Gaudreau, they play together all the time. And because of necessity, there's been so much change in that third line. You'd love to give Kerfoot two wingers and say, here's your guys all year. Like, really form some chemistry. Because very often, that's the key to a third line. You know, they're not the big skilled guys, but they all bring something to the party, mm-hmm. and together they're worth more than they are apart.
I think that's the thing about Hyman going is the one consistent line all year for the most part was Hyman, Matthews, and Marner. Mm-hmm. You know, Hyman did move around a little bit. There were times when he was on a third line with McCabe and Engvall, actually, at times. Moved around a little bit with Tavares and Nylander, but yeah, so you're going to have to find the pieces, and you're going to have to solidify that. But, you know, the big boys were always going to stay. The top four defensemen, the top four forwards, Jack Campbell, were always coming back. That's a good starting point if you can build around that and grow on that. Can you go from a very good team to a great team? That's for Kyle Dubas and Shanahan to figure out. You know, can they find a way to do that? That's the task, because you've got the makings of, a very good team. Can you be great? That's the only way you're really going to go on a run. You got to get to that next level. And Milwaukee and the Bucks, they were dealing with this for the longest time, right? Very good team. Constantly knocking on the door. Everything fell in place this year, and now they're great. Now they're NBA champions. And what Giannis just pulled off is one of the great achievements we've seen in NBA history, coming off a significant knee injury, which I think makes him even more likable than avoiding the super team or leaving to chase a championship. The fact that he did something that a lot of players in this age do not necessarily do, played through injury and did so at the level he did. I love seeing it. Here is Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio. He's been on the show a bunch of times in the past. We love having him on. Perfect day for Freddie to come on, considering what's going on in the NBA, the NFL, among other spots. And he joins us again back on Overdrive. What's happening, Freddie?
I'm good. I got a question for you guys, and I love what you guys had to say about what the Toronto Maple Leafs are trying to do, that they are good and having a chance to be great, what Milwaukee Bucks are able to do. How much pressure does it put on the Toronto Maple Leafs now that the Bucks broke a 50-year streak of not winning a championship?
Well, that's a good point. Those records come up all the time. The Leafs, I believe a couple of weeks ago, established the longest drought in NHL history. The Rangers had owned it, going from 1940 to 1994.
54 years.
The Leafs are now like 54 years and 3 months or whatever the hell it is. And they hold that title. So, yeah, with the Bucks going down, the Cubs went down in 16.
Yeah.
It's not good, man. It's not good. There is pressure.
And the reason I bring that up, because I think it really crystallizes, gentlemen, how hard it is not just to win a championship but even a playoff series. And so many things have to go your way. And especially in the drive for a Stanley Cup, you got a hot goalie like the Montreal Canadiens did getting all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals, or the puck could bounce the wrong way or whatever that is. You got a key injury that you may not be able to overcome. So many variables go into either winning a championship or not winning a championship. And you look at the Milwaukee Bucks, where they lose Giannis Antetokounmpo in Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals. They don't have him for Game 5 and Game 6, and people are thinking that's not going to work out for them. They win without him. Then they come back. He comes back for Game 1. We don't know what kind of Giannis we're going to see. And then he has a historic performance in the NBA Finals in the 6 games, breaking that 50-year losing streak in terms of winning a championship. So it really crystallizes that people put pressure on teams, and why haven't you done it? It is not that easy to win a playoff series, much less winning playoff series, and then a championship series.
No, you're absolutely right about that. And, you know, it's not sexy to talk about, and there's no depth to it. But a lot of it can just be luck. You know, a lot of it is luck, and the luck of the draw sometimes, like who you play that particular year.
Sure.
You know, as opposed to running into a team that maybe you just don't stack up that well against. And, you know, Giannis, you mentioned the injury. I remember saying before the series, if he was going to play and if he was only going to be at 70%, 75%, I did not picture a scenario where Milwaukee could win. And I don't know how he physically felt. He may have physically felt like 70 or 75%, but he played like 100%. Like, going off for 50 last night, how many times he had 40, 15, and 5. This guy put together a six-game run that is tough to match. I mean, there have been guys who have done it over the history of the NBA, but you add the injury, the uncertainty, like you just pointed out, man. What a performance, and what a mic drop for Giannis.
Yeah, you have to put him through an x-ray machine because I want to find if he's human. I want to find if he has bones or if he has blood or if he has skin because the way he was able to play, and so much sometimes, gentlemen, it's not so much how you play, but it's how you look. He had that look on his face in that game saying, I don't care what has to happen tonight. I'm not letting us lose this game. We are not going to go back to Phoenix and play a game seven. And even when Drew Holiday and also Chris Middleton were not playing well, Giannis like, don't worry about it. You guys have my back in game five and game six when I wasn't there. I got your back until you guys get right and ready. And defensively, those guys were still really good for the Milwaukee Bucks. But certain games, guys, you know this. You look at a play and you say to yourself, yep, whatever you think is going to happen, it ain't happening tonight because that guy's not having it. And it reminded me so much of Mark Messier back in game six of the Rangers in 1994. They're down 3-2. He called this shot. He had Messier face. He scored the hat trick. There's a game seven and one of the all-time great sevens in the history of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Giannis had that similar look to say, no matter what Phoenix does on the other side, I'm not going to let my team go down and you're not going to beat me. And he was just taking guys' souls away from them. He was taking the manhood away from DeAndre Ayton. Yeah. I felt so sorry for that young man because he was trying everything possible and nothing that he came up with was going to be a problem for Giannis. Sometimes you just have a dude that is not having it and it's going to be his night. And that was the case with Giannis in game six last night, putting up that 50 piece on the Phoenix Suns.
Freddie, you talk about a perfect night. Which of these is the least likely of these four things? 50 points, 14 rebounds, 5 blocks, or 17 of 19 from the free throw line?
It's definitely the 17 or 19 from the free throw line because at times Giannis looked like Shaquille O'Neal, and last night he got in touch with his inner Steph Curry, knocking down free throws. And it wasn't like he was getting the bounce on the rim. The majority of those free throws, guys, were clean through the net, clean through the net, clean through the net. He looked so confident going to the free throw line, and you knew things were going to be rough for Phoenix. Not so much the free throw shooting, but he was actually 1-3 from the three-point line. When he made 1 3-pointer, and the place almost blew the roof off that place, I said, man, it is not your night. When he's taking 1-3, feeling confident to knock that down, then he did not shoot another three from that standpoint. It was a perfect storm. You're exactly right. Everything you wanted to go right for Giannis and lead his team did. He did with defense. He did with offense. He did with the mentality. He did with the attitude and everything else. And my favorite moment was when he sat down, had the championship hat on, and you could tell all those emotions because he even said in the press conference that 7.5 years ago, my mother was looking for us. We didn't know where our next meal was going to come from. She was selling on the street in terms of goods on the street so we could eat. And 7.5 years later, I'm at the top of the world as an NBA champion. I wonder how much of all that flooded through him sitting there before he had a chance to go out there and get that MVP trophy and that championship trophy, finally being the champion and staying in Milwaukee and resisting overtures and also language saying that he should go somewhere else to win a championship.
Well, let's play that clip after the game where Giannis, you know, was asked about the achievement, what it means to him to, you know, fulfill the dream in Milwaukee, fulfill the journey in Milwaukee. And he didn't name names, but man, he named names last night. He was naming names post-game. Let's hear from Giannis about winning in Milwaukee.
Easy to go somewhere and go and win a championship with somebody else. It's easy. I could go, but I don't want to put anybody in the spot, but I could go to a super team and, you know, just do my part and win a championship, still one. But this is the hard way to do it, and this is the way I chose to do it. And we did it.
If you're LeBron James and Kevin Durant, how do you respond to that?
You don't respond to it because here's the deal. If Milwaukee did not do what they were supposed to do, when Giannis said, I want to win a championship here, I wonder if we're having that same conversation. And, gentlemen, something we brought up last night because it's very easy to say he can stay in Milwaukee, but the Milwaukee Bucks made it possible for him not to have to go anywhere because Chris Middleton increased his game. They bring in Drew Holiday and swing a trade for him to add another piece to that. They get Brook Lopez. They get Bobby Portis. They were able to make sure that Giannis was not going to be a one-man gang trying to make this work in Milwaukee. And I've never faulted guys for going to form a super team. I call it the AAU-ization when it comes to that in the NBA, and you're starting to see that in other sports as well. So I'm not blaming guys who want to increase their situation, because plenty of times we've seen guys want to leave a situation that they believe they can't win a championship and they don't trust the organization is going to do that. Now, certain situations are different. Kevin Durant leaving Oklahoma City to go to Golden State, then the Brooklyn Nets. He's searching for whatever that is, and I hope he finds it. And LeBron, he was a mercenary. Let's call it as it is, going from Cleveland to Miami, then back to Cleveland, and now to the Los Angeles Lakers. But it does depend on your situation and the trust you have in your organization. If you believe your organization cannot put the right pieces around you to make that work, then you are going to look to go somewhere else. Giannis is a human being, but he trusted the Bucks were going to do right by him, and they validated that trust. They validated his trust. But if they had not done that, and let's be honest, guys, this could be a whole different conversation if Kevin Durant's feet was a size 17 and not a size 18 when he hit that three-point shot that was turned out to be a two-point shot because his left foot was on the line. If that happens, then there's no way that Giannis, of course, is getting the NBA Finals or even the Eastern Conference Finals. They're finding a new head coach because Mike Budenholzer is not going to survive that. And it just goes to show you guys, you mentioned it earlier, how much luck can be involved. And then you get to that point and you deliver. So situations can dictate if a person feels really confident about staying with this team and trying to win a championship there, or if he looks at his organization and says, I don't think they got the stones to do that. I better keep my eyes and look for somewhere else.
Well, you look at the last three NBA champions, and I don't know if I would classify the Lakers as a super team. They had two all-time great players. You know, LeBron playing at his height. He had Anthony Davis healthy. You know, two of the five best players in the world, and then a pretty good supporting cast, but not a big three. There wasn't a third guy that would fit that bill. You look at 2 years ago with the Raptors, it was Kawhi, then a bunch of very good players with Lowry and Van Vliet had made it, Siakam had made it, Ibaka, Gasol, et cetera, but not a super team. And now you got Milwaukee, who, you know, Giannis is saying we're not a super team, although, you know, like Middleton, like you said, elevated. His stats in the finals were off the charts. Holiday got better as the series went on, a lot better as the series went on, a lot better as the playoffs went on. But can the rest of the league take anything from this when it comes to trying to build a championship-worthy team that maybe you don't need to do what Brooklyn is currently doing?
Oh, there's no doubt about that, because they even go back a little further before Kevin Durant joined Golden State. The Golden State Warriors were a super team, and they won the championship. They had Steph Curry, they had Klay Thompson, and a bunch of guys that played above their heads. David Lee, for example, Andre Iguodala, Draymond Green. So your point is definitely valid. When the more you try to put a super team together, it's not guaranteeing anything except that this is the team you're going to have. The Miami Heat had a super team with those three guys and LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. But they went 2-for-2 in the NBA Finals. Well, the first year they lost to the Dallas Mavericks, then went back-to-back, and then they lost to the San Antonio Spurs. You can build a team. A super team is not the end-all, the be-all to have a championship team. But if you put the right pieces together and the players enjoy playing with each other, then you can make that work. Now, in Brooklyn, it went well until they got injured. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, they wanted to play together. They were able to do that till injuries got in the way. So we'll see what that's going to manifest like next year when they have an 82-game season, and can they be able to make that work. But if you're the Milwaukee Bucks, whatever whispers about your organization and about Giannis and your coach, you completely wipe them away, because Giannis showed that he could be like that on that big stage and that he could lift his basketball team, that Mike Budenholzer can make the right kind of adjustments. You can put a super team together all you want, but if you don't produce, if you don't make plays, then all of a sudden people are looking at you and say, you tried to organize a team like this and it still didn't work, so what are you going to do now?
Well, it's over now. We're into the off season, and it's going to be a fun one. You know it is every year, right, Freddie? I mean, the NBA, this is when they really get started, man. This is when the entertainment really starts to kick up. But at the same time, the NFL, we're in camp. You got Ben Roethlisberger pictures going viral. I guess he's looking good. He's looking thin. We'll see what that means.
We need that diet. That's looking good.
Right. And yet, if you're in Milwaukee today, you're celebrating, you're on cloud nine, and then at some point Aaron Rodgers is going to smack you in the face and say, let's not forget about this football team you love.
Yeah, don't forget,
right,
he's part owner of the Bucks too.
Yeah, well, he was pretty happy last night, as he should be. But where do you see this one going, Freddie? Because I'm getting more and more nervous if I'm in Green Bay, that this guy is principled enough, stubborn enough, bitter enough, that he actually may just not play at all this year.
Well, see, I've been on the line that I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to play one more year for Green Bay because he doesn't give a you-know-what about the general manager, Brian Gutekunst, and also the president, Mark Murphy. But he does care about the players in that locker room and the coach, Matt LaFleur. That's been my selling point when I think Aaron Rodgers is going to play one more year. And then next year he's going to say, you're going to have to find a way to trade me because I'm not going to play one more year. He knows how close this team is to getting out of the NFC and get the Super Bowl championship. To bring memory to everybody's memory, if they host the NFC championship game and had Aaron Rodgers made a play or two, they could have been in the Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs. So it's going to go beyond that where he's going to say, you know, one more year with this group. We know we got the team, we got the squad that can make a difference and get the Super Bowl. I'll do that with them and for them. But the other two guys I mentioned, he could care less about them. But once this season is over, he's going to force his way out of Green Bay. They're going to have no choice but to trade him because you can't keep him there, and he's not going to go through this again and set out a season. He is near not the sunset of his career, but he clearly knows you take a year away from you at this point right now just on principle with a team that can win a Super Bowl, that's not going to work out for Aaron Rodgers. He's too competitive of a guy. But the fact that report came out that he refused an extension for 2 years to be the highest paid player in the NFL just to do that, that told me all I need to know that after 2021, he's going to go somewhere else and the Green Bay Packers are going to wind up accommodating him when it's all said and done.
All right, Freddie, great stuff as always, man. We appreciate you doing this. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
Sounds good, guys. You guys have a great weekend and talk to you soon.
Yep, you too. There's Freddie Coleman of ESPN and ESPN Radio. And I like the idea of that. I mean,
I can understand
why you don't sign the extension if you're determined of getting out there. Like, you don't care about years 3, 4, and 5 because you don't want to be there anymore, but you know you can't go anywhere this year. Then maybe you play it out. The question will become, is the damage done? You know, is he going to be so bitter, and is he going to be an issue in the room? Is he going to have to answer for it every single day?
But the point that he's
day?
Staying for this year and not walking – he is supporting his guys. I mean, that's the point that Freddie's making is, you know, he is being a team guy by doing that. And
yeah.
Then he's going to look after Aaron Rodgers after that.
Right. Is he gambling at all, though? What if he takes a big step back this year? What if he doesn't play so well? What if he suffers a big injury?
Yeah, there's always going to be a market for him. You know that.
Yeah, like, why not take the contract and then still demand out? Although maybe that hurts your chances of being moved, right? Like, if you have a big contract hanging around
your
neck.
That arguably limits where you're going to go.
Yeah, and that might be what it is. Maybe this is what it's always been about. Like, he's made so much money, he's going to make money this year and make money wherever he goes next.
And no matter what happens this year, he's still got it next. He does.
Yes, even if he comes back to the means a little. I mean, he just won the MVP, and arguably the best season of his career, close to it. I'm not expecting him to double down on that, but he's still going to be a guy who's going to throw for 4,500 yards and 40 touchdowns and, you know, 10 picks. Like, he's going to have a great year.
Yeah, it's the belief in his team, too.
And he's got a very good team around him. Yep, for sure. I'm all for that, and I would love for it to come out publicly almost before it all happens.
And what about going out on top? What if he wins?
Play one more year, try to win a Super Bowl, and then I'm out.
And just walk and smile.
That gives the Packers a full year here to prepare for that as well. Like, plan for it. Who's your next quarterback?
Well,
what is the transition?
They know that, don't they?
Well, if Jordan Love can play, I mean, I know that was their plan.
Variable.
That seems like it's kind of an important detail, right?
I thought that was a given.
Yeah. Well, it should be in
when
the first round.
When you drafted him, it was a given, wasn't it?
That was their plan, for sure. And we'll give him one more year. I think that can go a long way. Give him 2 years to sit and watch Aaron Rodgers and then say, put up or shut up, man. Sink or swim. Let's see what's up.
Aaron Rodgers sat and watched when he started.
Yep. For 4 years, I believe it was, with Brett Favre. Anthony Cirelli coming up. 2-time cup champ down in Tampa. He was protected by his team. What was that like, knowing that you were protected? It must have been very comforting. And I'm sure a compliment, right? I mean, Tampa sees a lot in them, as they should. So Anthony Cirelli coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, a little Jerry's After Dark, Pooley. I know you're excited about that.
I'm really excited because I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, you'll find out.
Thank
don't
you.
Worry, this will be an experience for you.
Why don't we have Anthony play Jerry's After Dark? That's a better idea.
Yeah, you think that's what he wants to do? You think he wants to even be on the show? I mean, let's be honest.
We won't keep him long. We'll just congratulate him.
Yeah, the Grappler was calling him, and nice enough to come on. He's a local guy, 2-time cup champ, protected down in Tampa, which I think is almost more flattering than anything
impressive.
Else. I think it's more impressive. If you're protected during the expansion draft, that goes a long way. He is a center with the Lightning. Again, local kid. And two-time cup champ, Anthony Cirelli, back on Overdrive. What's happening, Anthony?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good, man. What's that like to be protected during an expansion draft? Was that flattering or what?
I mean, yeah. Obviously, at the end of the day, it's a business. And to be protected, obviously, like you said, a little bit flattering there to be able to know that you're safe a bit. But at the end of the day, I know we're going to be losing a key piece to our lineup. So but I think everyone knows it's a business, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Anthony, how does that sound to hear two-time cup champion? Like, has that sunk in yet? You went through it once, but it was kind of a strange year and a bubble. Now you've done it twice. Not many guys get to say that in the history of the NHL.
Yeah, pretty crazy. Obviously, still letting everything sink in, but you go growing up, and not like you said, not many people win one. So you never thought that in my lifetime that I'd be, like you said, a two-time Stanley Cup champion back to back. So, but I was fortunate enough to play on two really unbelievable teams and unbelievable guys on the team. So to be a part of that is pretty special.
I think we had you on last year after you won a cup in the bubble, and you were somewhat uncertain of what kind of cup party you could have, in the COVID era, and whether you'd even get the cup. Will they be flying it around the world? How has that changed this year? Like, do you know of any details in terms of when you'll get your day with the cup, what it might look like, how you can plan for that? How different is this upcoming offseason and the celebrations compared to last year?
Yeah, so last year we wasn't able to travel. It was in Tampa the whole time, so it kind of sucked, not being able to share it with family and friends. At the end of the day, growing up, that's who helped me get to where I am today. So it's always nice to celebrate with them. But this year, a few details, not really sure yet, but it sounds like it's gonna be able to take it to your hometown, and I think it's following the protocols wherever you are. So still finding out the details, but it looks like hopefully I'm able to celebrate with some family and friends this year.
Anthony, I just want to talk about roles a little bit and your role on that hockey team and how clearly it's defined, or if it is just left up to you guys as players to define what your roles are, because you've had an increased role now, I think, as it's gone on, a little bit more of an offensive role, a little bit more offensive responsibility, but everybody seems to buy in to whatever they're asked to do.
Yeah, I think that's what makes our team so special, is everyone, knows their role and knows what they need to bring every single night. And, it's this guy scoring goals, guys killing penalties, guys blocking shots, whatever, their role was, they were going out there and doing it every night. And at the end of the day, I don't think anyone cared really who was scoring goals or who was playing the most minutes or anything like that. I think, as a collective group, we're just going out there and trying to sacrifice our bodies to help us win another Stanley Cup. And, the last 2 years, I thought we did that and it paid off.
Chatting with Anthony Cirelli of the Tampa Bay Lightning, two-time Cup champ. You were also on that Oshawa team that won the Memorial Cup back in 15. How would you compare the journey of the junior year ride, where you're billeting, you're going to school, it's all, you're not making money, you're all within 4 years, 5 years difference in terms of age, and the NHL ride, where it's pros, it's someone might be on the team that's 19, there could be someone that's 39. How would you compare the two journeys of going to a Memorial Cup and winning it and chasing a Stanley Cup and winning it?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the outside stuff where, age difference and the billets and stuff like that is obviously different. You're on your own here in pro, and you got to act like a pro, and over there you kind of had someone taking care of you. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think the hockey part, it's kind of the same. You go through a grind, you go through a four-round series, you got to make the playoffs, win your conference, win the OHL, and then go on and play in a mini tournament. So I think the hockey standpoint was just as much as a grind. Obviously, you're a lot younger and stuff like that, and in the pros, obviously it's definitely harder, because like you said, you're playing against all ages, and it's the National Hockey League, the greatest league in the world. So I think there's similarities in going through that Cup run with Oshawa. Definitely helped me when I got to the pro level.
chatting with Anthony Cirelli. So how quickly does it dawn on you that you have to get back in the gym and get going again? I mean, the NHL never stops. The schedule will be out. You'll be playing again before you know it. Now that you've experienced it, now that you've been through that, different timeline because of how quickly you had to turn around and with COVID and, you know, the cup came out in October, and then you started to play again in mid-January. But at what point do you realize, you know, you got to turn the page? You did what you did, but if you want to do it again, you got to get back on the grind.
Yeah, pretty quickly. I mean, training camp's, you know, just around the corner there, I think middle of September. So I think a lot of guys are just kind of healing up from whatever injuries they had, and it's, like you said, back in the gym and getting back to it. There's not much time in between seasons, and obviously going through it last year with the shortened off season and kind of knowing what to expect and how to train to get ready. Obviously, I think we have like 7 weeks or 8 weeks until we got to get going again. So, you know, try and get in the gym as much as I can and be ready for next season.
Anthony, did you look at anybody else yet on that hockey club, or has anybody looked at you and said three?
I mean, I think we're just kind of celebrating and enjoying these past 2 years. But, I mean, with the core group of guys that we have, you know, the Cooch, the Points, the Vasilevsky, and then and with Hedy and Mac back there and all our, you know, depth pieces that we have, I mean, obviously once you get to the top, you want to stay there and you want to continue doing that. So that's a long ways to go, like I said. But we're just enjoying it now and, like you said, get back in the gym pretty quickly and gear up for next season.
You obviously know Kucherov very well. You're very familiar with how talented he is, and he's won a Hart Trophy, and he did what he did last year during the playoffs. But the fact that he did not play a regular season game and then kind of blew the doors off the rest of the league in terms of points in the playoffs, did not win the Conn Smythe, but easily could have. Was there an element of surprise watching him do what he did, considering the surgery and the fact that he did not play any regular season games?
Yeah, I mean, knowing Cooch now for a couple of years, you just see in practice what kind of special player he is. So I think everyone in our room knew that, you know, once he was ready to play and he was good to go, he was going to dominate. And that's what he did out of the get-go from that first game throughout the entire playoffs. You just know how good he is. He's one of the best players in the world. So for me personally, I thought Cooch was going to come out and he was going to be ready to go like he was. And he battled, and he's a warrior. Obviously, the injuries and stuff that he had later on in the playoffs, and for him to continue playing and doing what he did, is a huge reason why you know, we won two cups.
Yeah, he's a pretty good player. He got a pretty good team down there.
Pretty good player.
Yeah, pretty good player. And you'll be back into your usual alignment next year, which means you'll be playing back in Toronto. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of excitement whenever you come home. And good luck with the summer and the off season and the cup celebrations and all that. And congrats on going back-to-back. And we'll see what you have in store next year. Thank you for doing this, Anthony. We appreciate it.
Perfect. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Anthony Cirelli. Pretty good career so far.
You think?
Yeah, winning a Memorial
Cup.
Don't
forget, he went to the finals of the Memorial Cup with the Erie as well.
Yes, later in his career.
Yeah, at the end he got traded.
I think you're right.
And made another run.
Yep, and he scored, did he score the OHL winning goal? I think he scored the Memorial Cup winning goal.
No, I think it was the Memorial Cup winning goal.
Yeah,
the first time around when he was young.
Yeah, when he was in Oshawa.
But then he got traded to Erie and had another run. So all the guy's done is won.
All he does is win, and he's just one of those guys, you know, somewhat unassuming style of play. Like, he's not 6'4", 230, trucking guys. He's not going to score 50 in a season. He's just going to finish his career, and you're going to say, wow, he played 1,200 games.
Just a hockey player.
Had a few cups, you know, junior. He may be sniffing around Team Canada at some point. Like, I don't have him currently on my team for next year, but would I be shocked if Cirelli was the fourth line center on that team? No.
No, you wouldn't be shocked
Absolutely
at all.
Absolutely not.
When I spoke to Rolls about Rolls with him, you know, I think of a guy like Tyler Johnson on that team who, the first time they went, you know, through, he was a huge offensive factor. And then even when they suffered the injury this year, and he got bumped up to the second line, and then that didn't work, and he was better on the fourth line. Like, it didn't matter. You know, it didn't matter where you were, what you were called, or you were just did what you were asked to do. And, you know, Cirelli, that's because he ends up playing with Stammer, and that's a huge role. And they filled it. And they did what they had to do.
They did. That's right. I mean, they Point and Kucherov were doing what they were doing, but with Cirelli and Stamkos and Palat, I believe. I think it was Killorn, Kucherov, Point, Palat,
but
Stamkos,
then Killorn went
Cirelli.
Down, and then yep. Johnson got out, and then back in, and
then
you know,
Gord,
Colton ended up playing the role up there.
Right. Yep. And then by the end, it was yeah, exactly. It was Colton and Stamkos. It was just they're such a good team. It's such a deep team, and
really
Cirelli,
well built.
Very well built. Yep. And even with what they're about to lose, where they lost Yanni Gourde is going to Seattle, they're going to have to trade. At least one. I mean, Tyler
well,
Johnson.
Well, you're losing Coleman and Gaudreau.
Gaudreau's gone. Probably signing with the Rangers.
Savard's gone
on your third pairing, and you mentioned Coleman. He's going to go somewhere, and you're probably going to have to trade at least one more piece. If
I
not
think you
have
to dump another $5 million.
So you might have to trade like Johnson and put like Palat with him,
or just move
Killorn, and. You know, that's gonna be a hit. Like, that's definitely going to be a hit. But at the end of the day, they're still going to have Kucherov, Point, Stamkos, Cirelli.
Yeah, essentially they have the best at every position. One of the very best at each position.
Yeah. Plus guys who are in the conversation. Like, you've got, to put it this way, Point is not the best centerman in the league, but he's one of the six or seven best.
Would he not be in the top 10 players in the league for you right now?
He's close. If you look at the playoffs, he absolutely is, the way he plays in the playoffs. Yeah, which is the most important part of the season,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, and Kucherov's in the top 10 players
in
the league.
And Kucherov is too, and Hedman is too, and Vasilevsky is too. I think they have four guys who you could argue in the top 10 in the league.
At their position, they're
but
in
that,
the top
and that's,
three or four.
When you talk positionally, you talk about them slotting in. Okay, so Point is one of the four or five best centers in the league, let's say.
Yes.
Kucherov might be the best winger in the league.
Yes.
If he's not, he's one of the best two or three. Cirelli, I would say, is one of the six or seven best second-line centers in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Stamkos, probably one of the five or six best second-line
wingers. Even call him a power
wingers.
Play specialist.
Right. I think Hedman's the best defenseman in the league. I think McDonough might be the best second-paired defenseman in the league or close to it. Vasilevsky's the best goalie in the league. Like, you start slotting and you're like,
what you've got to factor in, Brian, it's really interesting what you just said is slotting is where it allows the other guys to play. You know, it allows Sergachev to play in a third pairing, which is really nice and comfortable to break into the NHL like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have the demands of, you know, seeing the best players on the other team every night in matchup situations. And I think that's what you miss when you have the very best. The next tier gets to slot in so comfortably.
Right. And that's a good point, because Cirelli on a lot of teams would be the number one center, mm-hmm. and it puts him in a different spot. McDonough would be the number one defenseman.
Well, he was
or top
in New
parent.
York. They went to the finals. He
exactly.
was the captain, the number one.
But because Hedman's there, you can classify him as a second pairing guy. Then you're like, that's one of the best second pair defensemen in the league. Right? And
look at
Vasilevsky
the matchups.
It's crazy. It's crazy how good they are. Yep. Crazy how good they are. Jerry's After Dark. I promised it, and it's coming. It's got to be a part of the program here. We've got at least one more, maybe a couple more. Jerry's After Dark still to come.
I can just imagine where this idea came from.
Yeah, it was.
Who this idea came from.
Well, listen, everyone was working that day, and there was a lot of creativity that came to the forefront. And the rest is history, and you get to benefit from that.
I have a question for you, too, before we're done, so we'll get to that.
And okay. It
deals with Carey Price in the expansion draft.
All right. We'll pose that question. We'll get into it as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.
Welcome to Jerry's After Dark, where all of your wildest hot takes come to life. Because Jerry's always in the mood for one more. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Do you, Pooley? Do you know exactly what he's talking about?
I've never known what he's talking about. Not many today.
People do. Yeah, that's a pretty valid description of what I think most people
forget,
go
I've been sitting at the back desk with him for the last couple of years. Solo back there.
You know what's up. All right, so before we get to your Carey Price Seattle question, we'll quickly fire up one more horny hot take.
Giannis is now the undisputed best player in the NBA and will hold on to that title for the next three seasons. Whoever wins the championship, whatever guy's on that team, Hazy B says is the best player in the game, does it every year.
Yeah. Well, let me answer this first, Pooley, because of what Jerry just said, which I think he was taking a shot at me, but I think that's the nature of the NBA, and that's why I'm going to be low on this, because I think as of right now, Giannis is the best player in the world. I mean, two-time MVP, what he just did throughout the playoffs and specifically in the finals, epic. Epic. This guy improves every single year, and he's under contract. He's healthier, we believe he will be, and he's still in his prime, and he's going to have a very good team around him. But the way the NBA operates is whoever's hot at that moment becomes the best player. So if Kevin Durant torches this league next year and torches the playoffs, he will be labeled the best player in the world. If LeBron is healthy and goes on a run and, you know, brings the clock back and all of a sudden looks like he did a few years ago, he'll be in that conversation. If Kawhi ever gets healthy again, it's just not the nature of the NBA. Even with LeBron, who has been the best player in the league for 12, 15 years, there was always like, well, maybe Steph's better right now. You know, maybe Wade is better right now. Maybe Dirk had a better season. Maybe whoever it is. So I'm going to say like 25%. He's got the best shot of anyone to hold on to a title for 3 years, but 3 years is a long time in the NBA before someone usurps your title as the best player.
Yeah, I might be a little bit higher than that. They might be able to help him out a little bit around him again, too. You know, they might be able to build a little bit around him. Now, hey, does someone want to go? He talks about not building a super team. Does someone unexpectedly want to go and say, hey, I want to play with Giannis?
Right, someone jumps on the bandwagon.
It's a reverse, the old reverse super team.
I like the way you're thinking. Take a cheap deal just to be there.
Make his life a little bit easier.
Yep, I think you're right about that.
Which increases his abilities.
Yep, I think you're very right.
So I might go a little higher than that.
All right, you got a number?
35.
35%. Okay, I like it. There it is. Yeah. Your first foray into Jerry's After Dark. You survived. It's all good. So what do you have for me here,
So here's my Carey Price question for you. The very first time you're part of the management group in Montreal, Trevor Timmons is there, Scott Mellenby, John Sedgwick, Mark Bergevin, maybe a couple other guys, right? There's six, seven guys in the room. The first time you discuss the Seattle situation and someone says, what if we don't protect Carey? And there's silence in the room for 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And Bergie's the boss. And he clearly said, well, let me hear more about that. He didn't say, that's ridiculous, don't even consider it. And that's impressive.
I think it would have been.
That's impressive.
It is impressive. I think the fact that, listen, now they're I'm sure they're very happy in terms of what the Carey Price is still a Canadian. I think that was always the intention. That's probably what they always.
And it was a risk.
Wanted. It was a risk. Fleury goes, you know, in a young defenseman instead of Carey Price. That's the pick out of Montreal. I can make the case, and I have this week, that it would have been in their best interest for Seattle to claim Carey Price.
I agree, but I'm just talking about the ability to put him in that position.
Yeah.
Like the acceptance of putting him out there. The boldness of putting him out here. And that's got to be a management. I would have liked to have seen what the genesis of that thought was, where it came from, because, you know, I did a lot of games. Jake Allen was the reason they made the playoffs this year. He just was.
Yeah, especially early in the year, He played really, really well.
And Carey Price knows how easy Jake Allen makes his life for the next couple of years. And he wants that. He doesn't want to feel like he's got to play every night for his team to win, for his team to be successful.
Yep.
And he knows when he's fresh at the end how good he can be. So all those factors go into play. But I just think it's a strong management group decision that let that idea get to the surface.
And it worked for them. But doesn't it also highlight the elephant in the room that contract is a mess?
Oh, for sure.
And he's 34 and he's got 5 years left.
For
and
sure.
He's injured.
For sure it does. But if they are going to keep the contract, this is the best way to keep it with Jake Allen.
Yes. From that standpoint, you're absolutely right.
So yep. I'm just talking from a management standpoint, the acceptance of letting that idea get to where it did.
Yep. If Price is here, it's in our best interest to keep Allen. How do we do it?
Right.
And
that's all I got.
That's how they did it. And that's how it worked. Yep. No, you're right. But I think it would have been in their best interest. They'd never admit to it publicly, nor should they, if Seattle took Price. Because
not in the court of public opinion in Montreal.
No, but then what it would have done was the blood is off their hands, because a day will come where a tough decision has to be made on Carey Price. And they know it. They know it's coming.
But not today.
It may be 2 years down the road, three, but at some point they're going to say, we can't give this guy 50 starts, you know, and he's making 10 and a half.
Right.
It's coming. Pooley, great seeing you, buddy. As
always a pleasure, Brian.
Yep, we appreciate you doing it, man. There he is, Dave Pullen. I'm off for a couple of days. Gord Miller will be in this seat for a couple of days. Kyle Dubas will be on tomorrow at 5:05. I go away, and Kyle's coming on.
Coincidence?
I think it's a coincidence, and maybe it's not, but I think it's a coincidence. So look forward to that. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. Gordon, the boys are back tomorrow at 4 p.m. They will chat then.